Welcome to Crazy Shit in Real Estate, a weekly podcast where I walk you through some of the wildest, most unbelievable stories you'll hear from the world of real estate. If you like real estate and you love crazy, this is the podcast for you.
And welcome back to the podcast. I'm Lee Brown, and you're listening to Crazy Shit in Real Estate. And as usual, you're listening because these are the stories you hadn't heard anywhere else, because realtors tell their best stories over cocktails, frankly, with each other. And so this is your first time to get behind the curtain, because HGTV is scared to get behind the curtain with us because they have no idea. And with me today, I have an experienced investor. We've got Aaron Fragnito. Aaron, welcome to the show.
Hi, Lee. Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
Aaron, you are big in making money in real estate, but not necessarily in the traditional, let me charge some commission angle. Our listeners might be interested in knowing what it's actually like to be a real estate investor. So I was hoping maybe you could tell us some stories from the investor dark side.
Well, the dark side, I mean, being a landlord is one of the hardest things. A lot of these gurus say, oh, buy an income property, become a landlord. It's the easiest thing in the world. It's not. I've been dealing with Section 8 real estate for years, and it's very difficult. Some of the stories we've had is when we're leasing a unit out to a tenant, there's an annual inspection every year. Section 8 coming, you have to pass an annual inspection. So the tenants are often very damaged. We had a property on, well, it's called Sunset Ave in Newark, but they also call it Gunset. So I bought the property for a great price, and it looked great on paper. But the day after I bought it, there was a murder in front of the property. And that, unfortunately, was a common thing in that area. So I had a lot of trouble leasing the units. They did eventually cash flow, but the tenants I'd put in there would destroy the unit year after year, and it was just in the cycle of losing income on the property. So, you know, it's a lot of headaches with managing real estate. We fixed that over time by developing a management company, and I could tell some really fun stories as well.
How long ago was that Gunset Avenue story?
Oh, probably about 4 years ago.
Because the reason I ask, Section 8 properties get a terrible rap in the world because traditionally they are more challenged, because that's a segment of the population that is being assisted for whatever reason. Some are well-meaning and just need somewhere to live, and some are taking advantage of the system. But with that being said, in this current climate right now where we have housing affordability issues across the country, we're seeing longer and longer wait lines for Section 8. And so several of my investor friends are finding that their tenants are behaving better because they know that if you get booted from Section 8, you ain't getting back on the list. So are you seeing that transition as well, where your tenants are trying a little harder than in the past?
Yeah, I mean, you really have to pick and choose your tenants when leasing with Section 8. The main goal with any time is interviewing your tenants and understanding them. But there's a line out the door for Section 8 leasing. As long as, you know, you price the property appropriately with what their Section 8 voucher is for, the tenant can move into the property. So, yeah, Section 8's a great source of tenants, but you really have to, like anything, pick and choose the right tenants and make sure you're putting the right people on your property that meet the type of community you're trying to create.
And know, people, when we say pick and choose tenants, we're not talking fair housing. We're not looking at those situations. So, Aaron, knowing that there are people who would absolutely violate fair housing if given the opportunity, tell them how an effective landlord or property manager picks good tenants and what characteristics you look for that obviously aren't violations, but give you some insights and clues into who might be a good long-term bet as a tenant.
Yeah, so obviously you can't pick a tenant based on the demographics in the fair housing laws. We're talking about doing a credit check, doing a check on evictions. You can see how many times a tenant has been evicted sometimes. You can also see, now again, the credit report on many Section 8 tenants is not going to be great, but it also depends on, you can see what type of credit they're paying, what type of things they're missing. So, and also just talking to the tenant, interviewing them, you know, seeing how they keep their car and how they talk to you. Do they talk to you with respect? I know that's, you know, a little shallow, but it's true.
I'm glad to hear you say that, because I'll look in the back seat, and if I see that it's covered in like McDonald's Big Mac wrappers and filet of fish containers, I don't want that tenant, because if their car looks like disgusting fast food hell, they're not going to take great care of the property they live in.
And that shows a quality of life that they want to enforce in their life. And that's important. You want a building that has a quality of life, and you want to be safe, quiet living, and clean. You know, you don't want rats and rodents there. So buildings quickly snowball out of control, especially Section 8 Class D real estate, if you don't put in the right tenants. And that involves interviewing them. And, you know, you want a property manager that has a good experience and can kind of talk to enough tenants to know, you know, who's respectful, who's not. And I know that might seem like an obvious thing, but people are on their best behavior when they come and try to lease the unit. And sometimes you'll get real tricksters in there that do play the system, do take advantage of the Section 8, lease out the units and cause a lot of damage to your property. You know, I had a scenario where on Gunset Ave, we bought the property across the street at the same time from the property we bought from the one that was person was murdered in front of. So we bought two properties on Gunset Ave. And the second unit property that we leased out had a big finished basement and lots of units and lots of doors. It was like a 5-bedroom, 2-bath on the first floor. And we got a good amount of Section 8 for it. We had two more units above that. It was a nice cash flowing piece of real estate that we refinanced all our money out of. But the tenants on the first floor took full advantage of the system and they leased out every single door, every single bedroom. And we would go in there when there was complaints of things not working. I mean, they really wouldn't complain about anything. That was the other problem. The unit was a disaster. There were rodents everywhere. There were, you know, cockroaches, and there was broken glass everywhere. And I went in there one time, and it was like really depressing. It was one of those commercials you see where you are supposed to donate money. And I felt like I was in a third world country, and I realized that this is my real estate. And I felt so bad about how these people were living, but I didn't know. They didn't call us. They didn't tell us. And we had no idea how they were living. And it was a disaster. And there were little infants, little kids running around this unit with bare feet. And there was broken glass in the corner. And all the bedrooms were rented out. So the kids would sleep in the living room. There was no adult watching everyone. There was like some 16-year-old kid in the basement or something who was supposed to be in charge. And we just realized there that we didn't go to the unit because no one called us. You know, we were always keeping an eye on our buildings, but you can't just bust into the units without telling them. Sometimes tenants don't want you to come into the unit. And that was this tenant. And we were like, okay, well, you're not really bothering us. We're not going to bother you. And since then, we've required actually our property manager does walk through each unit every 6 months to 8 months to just, you know, hey, how's everything going? Peek your head in there. You're not going to open up their closets, but, you know, want to make sure everything was kosher.
Well, I mean, you can change the smoke detector batteries. You can change the furnace filters. There's little things that you want to upkeep anyway on your property. And it is a good chance to lay some eyeballs on the situation inside. But my question for you is, when you ran into this scenario, I mean, you're a professional investor. You've got a realtor past. Obviously, your heart is in doing the right thing for people. Did you call DSS or call for social services when these children were unsupervised? Because I know that you can't walk out of there and pretend you didn't see that.
Right. So we did actually talk to someone about that. I'm not sure what happened from that point. We actually ended up tried to evict the tenant because we didn't want that in our place. We tried to change what was going on with you. You can't live like this. There has to be rule and law here. You can't be subleasing the units. They wouldn't cooperate. So we had to work an eviction, and the courts wouldn't allow an eviction for that because they had a bunch of kids and the court really sided with them. So we didn't know what to do. So we actually ended up selling the building, partially because also we had a third partner on the building that wanted to, sell and wasn't really cooperating with the initial strategy. So we ended up just selling the building and getting a little bit of profit.
Aaron, what state was that property in?
That was in Newark, New Jersey.
Okay, so back up for 1 second. You said you were not allowed to evict?
Well, we tried to evict. We went to eviction court, and the judge said that we didn't have sufficient evidence to have the tenant removed from the apartment. And, you know, I just had some pictures of kind of how the unit was kept. But the argument was they are allowed to keep their unit the way they want to keep it.
I am glad you brought this up, though, because for a lot of our investors, they don't realize that the tenants, you already kind of alluded to this earlier, they know the laws. They know exactly where they can skirt it and what they can get away with. And your general human sense of how things should be won't always be held up in a court of law because they are going to be biased toward tenants, especially when the tenants are in that needier class. Which is kind of a shame because people that have children walking around on broken glass need a wake-up call in their personal lives because you've got a young person in there. You got to take care of them, and the courts don't always listen. So it's even more reason to do your spot checks so that you can help somebody clean it up if you can't get rid of them. But I do want to know, though, as a realtor. So when I'm talking to investors, they hear stories like this and they panic that it's always like this. How many times would you say it's sketchy and scary in investor world, Aaron? Would you say it's like 20% of the time you run into issues, or 10, or...
Right. Running into issues is an everyday thing with owning and trading real estate.
Well, I mean, I don't mean like my water heater needs to be fixed and you have to send a plumber out. I mean like the sketchy tenant that you want to get rid of. Right. Pacific Heights. I always tell my investors, never, ever watch that movie Pacific Heights. Did you see that back in the 80s? I mean,
no.
You're obviously younger than I am, but go watch it sometime. And it was a Michael Keaton. Mm-hmm. He was the squatter tenant who wouldn't leave. And it was awful. And so I always tell people not to watch it, which probably means they do watch it. But anyway, so he was a squatter and there were roaches. And then you have the non-payment of rent and you have people that terrify the neighbors and all these other scenarios. So the ones that are that make you want to pull what's left of your hair out, what percentage of the time would you say those are?
Well, now we actually buy buildings with tenants like that in them. We have a good system of removing them and putting good tenants in the property that are going to build a fun family environment. You know, we kind of put ourselves in those positions where we deal with those individuals, because that's how you force value into a building, by removing the bad apples and putting in the people who are not drug dealers. So
it's, okay, so I guess this means Aaron is not a good bellwether question that for him. So don't listen to him because he enjoys it.
Yeah, let me answer the question. Right, I enjoy it. I'm a sicko. So no, let me answer the question properly. It all depends on how you vet your tenants. If you're good at vetting your tenants, the story I told was 5 or 6 years old when I put that tenant in there. We were getting started. We were using the wrong management company. Since then, I've fired that management company, developed my own, which is, in my opinion, the best management company in the world. And that has made all the difference. So now my real estate holdings cash flow, they're easy, numbers on a spreadsheet instead of, keeping me up at night. So owning real estate can be passive. It can be good an experience. And I have 100 units. So that was one unit out of 100.
So basically, people, even if you enjoy the drama like Aaron does, still see there's a third party involved. And I am an investor, have been for a long time. And I'd make no secret of the fact that I do not manage my own properties. I have a property management company that handles them. I used to have a property management company, but it is a high headache and low margin business. So I sold that, which was a very happy day for me because my focus is way better off in other places, which is why I have a property manager. Because if you are a successful attorney and you've got cash, you want to buy some rental properties, I can guarantee you, you're making more as an attorney than you're going to make in cash flow on this particular property, the first one you buy. So you have somebody else manage it, and you think about the equity upside. There's different ways to look at it. But also remember, a professional property manager, they know all the laws that tenant is trying to sneak around, and you don't. So they are the best gap for you because they know things and they know how to deliver the written notices and how to ask the correct questions on that initial tenant interview that Aaron has mentioned multiple times. And I hope y'all have caught on that you ought to successfully interview tenants before you let them move in.
Sometimes we've actually done, well, of course you want to interview a past landlord. That's always good. And this is a little intrusive. My partner does this. I'm not a huge fan of it, but it will actually go to where they live now and just take a look at how they live and how they keep the unit, you know, without being too intrusive, just like a 30-second walkthrough. So that is something we've done when we're unsure about a tenant, or they like maybe their income is just on the line or something. We need some other verified facts.
Well, I mean, it's no different than the Google car driving around making sketchy little videos of all of us. Y'all are just doing it in your own little way.
Right.
All right. So, Aaron, you're talking to somebody who wants to become an investor, and they need to know the one most important piece of information you would give them today. What is that piece of advice?
Probably diversify. But if you're getting started, work with people that are far more experienced than you and have taken their hits already and have developed a good system where they can lie to earn nice returns and passive returns to real estate.
So where do you find that person in different markets? Where would you go if you were in Kansas and you wanted to become an investor? How do you find those mentors and partners and starting networks?
So what I'm explaining is a syndication. It's called a real estate syndication. If you're getting started investing and you don't want to run around and do all the work and you don't know how to either, a syndication is an existing business that is going to be buying real estate every you know, year, quarter. So we buy an apartment building every single quarter. We pull together People's Capital, hence People's Capital Group. And of course, we have the management company in-house so we can reposition it and create better value for our investors. So there's tons of syndications out there. You can do out-of-state. You can do in-state. We only do North Jersey. A lot of guys don't do Jersey because it's very hard to find deals and it's very hard to cash flow here, but we've cracked the code. But you can do, you know, emerging markets, and there's big guys who you've seen on TV, and then there's little guys like me as well that are more local. So figure out what's the best fit for you and go to RIAs. Go on meetup.com. Find some meetup groups. Go to some meetup groups. Start talking to people. Start getting out there and asking questions and figuring out the right path for you. A syndication may or may not be that. It's very hands-off, but you can make nice cash flow and tax write-offs and do pretty well with the syndication.
You know, I have to say this because to our listeners, they might be thinking we're giving tax and legal and financial advice, and we are not. Aaron and I would both tell you to always have your attorney and your financial planner look at all this stuff to verify what your tax write-offs could be and how you would handle that passive income and if it's active income. So you should ask all those questions of a professional. Make sure you have a team in place, because those of us that love the real estate side, like Aaron, are really great at what we know on this side. And we know just enough to be dangerous of the other detail work. So you always have a team of pros with you. And I'll just say that if I were investing in a market, I would be finding a small, local, well-knowledged person like an Aaron, as opposed to a giant syndicate, just because I like that local knowledge and I like supporting local businesses where I know my investors are taking care of the communities that I'm interested in. So just the Lee Brown opinion on things, that bigger is not always better. So Aaron, if somebody's thinking of getting involved in investing, they want to find out more about your group in Northern New Jersey or how they could come and find out how you could be their mentor or coach and consultant in this field, how can they find you?
Sure. Well, they could check out peoplescapitalgroup.com. But Lee, I just want to tell you a quick fun story that about the reason we only invest locally and the reason we developed our management company. We had hired three previous management companies. One would meet tenants of the property, collect the first month's rent and security deposit, sign a lease, give them a set of keys, and then meet a tenant there in front of the property 2 or 3 hours later and do the same thing again. And they would collect the cash 3 or 4 times from tenants and then run off with it. He ended up stealing security deposits from other landlords. And I felt in my gut that, he was not a trustworthy individual. So we did not give security deposits, which would have put our small company at the time at a great risk. So at the end of the day, trust is so 100% with management companies. The syndicates that go out of state and trust other management companies to manage their real estate, you're trusting other companies to manage, you know, the money you've raised, the investors you've promised you're going to do your best with. And you know, in my opinion, I would like to own that company that's managing that capital that I've promised I'm going to make those returns on. So by necessity, we developed our management company. By necessity, we invest locally and know our market very well. So anyway, our website is peoplescapitalgroup.com, and that's just a fun story on why we invest locally. And if you're thinking about investing, invest locally as well. You know, I think out-of-state investing is very tough, in my opinion, to get started. So it's peoplescapitalgroup.com. All information's there. You can check us out.
And I'll second that, especially if you want to know what you've bought. One reason people buy real estate is because it's a tangible investment. It's not like playing in the stock market. And there's a little bit of something to be said for you being able to drive by and lay your eyes on it and know that it's yours because you are the local owner, even if the tenants don't have the faintest idea who you are because you've named it in an LLC or some such. Aaron, thank you so much for coming on the podcast and sharing some of your insights on investor properties. And now I know you're going to go watch Pacific Heights because you realize you've missed out on a really great investor movie, but do it after you spend your next round of investment money, okay?
All right. Sounds good. Thanks a lot for having me.
All right, guys, if you're listening and you're a realtor, investor, inspector, lender, or a regular buyer or seller of real estate with your own story to tell or angle on real estate, give me a hit at Lee Brown on Twitter or any of the social networks to be featured on a future episode of Crazy Shit in Real Estate. Make sure you subscribe for more because we'll be back with more stories from the fun side of real estate, and we'll see you next time.
If you are listening to this episode and you need to tell us something about your crazy life in or around real estate, then tweet me at Lee Brown or reach me on any of the social networks. That's if you're a broker, realtor, investor, inspector, lender, or just a regular normal human being who happens to have dealt in real estate. Subscribe for more episodes. And as always, we are thrilled that you joined us for some crazy shit in real estate. See you next time.